Hello, this is Chris with the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, November 18th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. It's a wrap. Third Sunday Market finishes season in high holiday spirit from Bloomington. The Third Sunday Market wrapped up its 2024 season Sunday with sleigh loads of holiday decor, Christmassy collectibles, and antiques for year-round occasions. Thousands of shoppers flocked to the market at Bloomington Interstate Center from near and far. They included Carol Ackerman of Marine, who bought herself a wooden sleigh. Ackerman, who was visited the market before, said she planned to decorate the sleigh. "We always find something," she said of the market. Michael Raycraft, who promotes the market with his wife, Emily, said Sunday was their biggest show they've ever had in November, with 150 vendors tabling items. He said they've offered a specialty November show for at least 10 years. Raycraft, whose family has produced the family-friendly market for 37 years, said the show normally has more than 400 vendors when the summer season monthly market extends through the outdoor fairgrounds of the Interstate Center. Raycraft also said the turnout was outstanding on this Sunday, with shoppers and vendors coming from as far away as Texas, Minnesota, and North Carolina. "I'll take full credit for the weather, too," added Raycraft, referring to Sunday's weather nearing 60 degrees. From a dealer's perspective, he said vendors have been very optimistic and enthusiastic about sales. Looking back on 2024, Raycraft said they had a fantastic season. The market will resume May 18, 2025 at the same venue. While they'll get a little bit of a break after this weekend's close, Raycraft said organizing the market takes year-round work because they're always recruiting different vendors with different things. Raycraft said he's proud to keep the market in business in its 37th year. He said they seek a cross-section of goods that includes not only high-quality collectibles, but also affordable items. He said it's a pretty fine line to walk. "Sometimes you can be too fancy for your own good," Raycraft said. "So we have to have things that appeal to a seasoned collector, but at the same time you want to have a market for people who are new and kids." He added, "Those customers can include college kids looking to decorate with some beer lights or a vintage sign collector looking for a high-end, high-profile collectible." Other items seen leaving with Sunday's customers included vintage snowshoes, decorative pine branches, blow-mold Santa figures, and painted metal cutouts of Snoopy from the Peanut comic series. One merchant of merry merchandise was Kathy Sales, who owns Cat and Walt's Junk and Treasures store at 1254 North Poplar Street in Centralia. Sales was assisted at the market by her daughter, Liz Mays. Sales said she supplied her Sunday booth from a private estate sale she shopped at five different times. She said it looked like a yard sale at first, and she saw a lot of Christmas items. "I was like, oh, I love Christmas, and I was taking pretty much everything." She was invited into a large basement area at the sale and was offered the chance to buy holiday items by the tote box. "The house was Christmas 365 days a year," she said. Those items she found included several tables lined with jewelry boxes, brooches, signs, and more. Sales said it was fun to hear different stories at the estate sale and share her own. "I think that's what Christmas is about, sharing and just loving your heritage." Dan Vore stocked his market booth with items from his store in Vienna, Missouri, called Junkers Junction. His wares includes holiday items like large metal cutout figures of the Grinch. Vore also offered more rustic products like cowhides and metal sculptures of woodland and farmland critters. Lined up in the middle of his booth were statues for foxes, chickens, turtles, goats, pigs, and more. When asked which animal sculptures sell best, Vore said, "Skunks. I can't keep them." Selling handmade items at the market was Jim Brock of Champaign. He offered cutting boards, iron coat hooks, door hangers, and more. He sold items through his business, J&P Creations, a name that uses his initial and that of his wife, Pam. Brock said the market has been good this season, and his breadboards are a popular gift item. Brock said he almost single-handedly made boards with a Lichtenberg electrical burn mark pattern. He said he had a licensed electrician run 20,000 volts through the board to burn it, and Brock filled in the burn cavities with epoxy. He said the electrical burn process is dangerous and better left to professionals. "I'll stay away from it," Brock said, "of the voltage amount." Also on the front page, Trump inherits primed economy. Biden-funded projects ready to go. Inflation, jobless rates down. From Washington. All that's left is for President-elect Donald Trump to put his name on it if he wants. Trump won the White House in large part because of voters' frustration with high prices and a sense that the United States needs major changes. But when he enters office in January, Trump will inherit an economy primed for growth. The unemployment rate is low, inflation is easing, and President Joe Biden's administration has teed up a ready-made list of infrastructure projects that could go from theoretical to reality over the next several years. There's the TSMC computer chip plant in Arizona, the new Hyundai electric vehicle factory in Georgia, and a modernized I-375 in Michigan, among thousands of projects underway that will take years to complete. All of that means it could be Trump rather than Biden who gets to tell Americans that he built the country back better. If he decides to let the projects proceed, that is. Biden himself acknowledged last week that the positive economic impacts from his policies would occur after his term ends in January. "Much of the work we've done is already being felt by the American people, but the vast majority will be felt over the next 10 years, he said in remarks in the Rose Garden. "It's going to take time, but it's there. The road ahead is clear." While Trump on the campaign trail railed against Biden's record, he has offered few details on what initiatives he might scrap. Trump said in September he would rescind all unspent funds under the misnamed Inflation Reduction Act and said on Joe Rogan's podcast that tariffs would do more for manufacturing than the funding provided by the CHIPS and Science Act. But Biden aides privately told the Associated Press that they expect Trump to continue the planned projects and take credit for Biden's accomplishments, just like the Republicans in Congress who've celebrated plant openings and infrastructure developments in their districts, but voted against them. The administration spent millions of dollars to put up road signs to promote Biden's role in the projects. All Trump would need to do is relabel them with his own name. Biden aides feel confident that Trump won't want to cut programs that are helping states he won in this year's election, even if Republicans try for a token repeal of some provisions in order to help fund some of their own tax cut plans. When asked about this possibility, Caroline Leavitt, a spokeswoman for the Trump transition, said the American people reelected Trump by a resounding margin, giving him a mandate to implement the promises he made on the campaign trail, and he will deliver. Natalie Quinlan, a deputy chief of staff for Biden's White House, said the administration's programs are already starting to make a positive difference for the economy. "We have already announced investments for 70,000 infrastructure and clean energy projects, catalyzed nearly $1 trillion in private sector investment, lowered prescription drug prices, and created 1.6 million construction and manufacturing jobs," she said. "Over the coming months, we will continue to run through the tape and ensure Americans benefit from this president's agenda for years to come." Trump is also inheriting, by many measures, an increasingly healthy economy, despite his claims that conditions are miserable. The Republican who won the election with the unemployment rate at a healthy 4%, inflation at 2.4%, and the Federal Reserve cutting its benchmark rates in ways that could support additional growth. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell summarized the situation earlier this month by saying the economy is strong overall. Voters, though, felt the economy was weak. They penalized Democrats for inflation that reflected supply chain challenges after the pandemic, the impact of government aid that also energized job growth, and Russia's 2022 invasion of Ukraine causing spikes in energy and food prices. Voters appeared to care less about the overall rate of inflation, though, than the changes in price levels that occurred over the past 4 years. Nearly 9 in 10 identified inflation as an important factor for their choice in this year's election, with Trump winning the clear majority of this group, according to AP VoteCast, an extensive survey of more than 120,000 voters. Still, economists who've advised and worked previously with Trump felt the economy was not as solid as the top-line numbers suggest. They stressed the high level of government debt that has been driving growth, even though Trump himself showed little appetite for cutting deficits during his previous time in the White House. Government spending is keeping the economy afloat, said Joseph LaVorga, who was the chief economist of the White House National Economic Council during Trump's presidency. LaVorga also noted that much of the recent job growth has come from government and healthcare hiring instead of from manufacturing and other for-profit sectors. There is a recognition among some Republican lawmakers that the energy tax credits that were part of the Inflation Reduction Act were positives and should be preserved. 18 GOP House members sent House Speaker Mike Johnson a letter in August asking him to preserve the tax credits. Birth control abortion pill requests surge. Hours after Trump was elected president for the second time, Dr. Clayton Alfonso had two messages from patients seeking to replace their IUDs. Over the next few days, three women inquired about getting their tubes tied. All of them said the election was the reason why they're making these choices now. Requests for long-term birth control and permanent sterilizations have surged across the nation since the election, doctors told the Associated Press. And companies that sell emergency contraception and abortion pills say they're seeing significant increases in requests from people who are stockpiling the medications. One saw a 966% increase in sales of emergency contraception from the week before in the 60 hours after the election. I saw this bump after the Trump election in 2016 and after Roe v. Wade was overturned in 2022, said Alfonso, an OBGYN at Duke University in North Carolina. But the patients seem more afraid this time. Although anti-abortion advocates are pressing Trump for more restrictions on abortion pills, it's unclear what, if much, will be done regarding access to contraceptives of any kind during the second Trump administration. Trump told a Pittsburgh television station in May that he was open to supporting regulations on contraception. But after media reports on the interview, he wrote on his social media platform, Truth Social, that he has never and will never advocate for restricting birth control and other contraceptives. Alfonso said his patients want to replace still effective IUDs and restart the 3 to 12 year clock on them before the inauguration. He also said the women are particularly concerned about IUDs, which have been attacked by abortion opponents who believe life begins when an egg is fertilized. Experts believe the device works mostly by blocking fertilization, but also may make it harder for a fertilized egg to implant in the womb. A patient who recently requested a Tubal legation told Alfonso she doesn't want kids and is just absolutely terrified of either forced pregnancy or inability to access contraception. Pittsburgh OBGYN and abortion provider Dr. Grace Ferguson said more of her patients are scheduling IUD insertions or stockpiling emergency contraception, telling her up front that it's because of the upcoming administration change. One patient, Mara Zupko, said she wants prescription emergency contraception since she's on the cusp of the weight limit for Plan B, the most well-known over-the-counter type. Her husband is getting a vasectomy. "We've always kind of teetered on whether we wanted children or not," said Zupko, 27. "But as the world has become scarier and scarier, we realized we didn't want to bring a child into that environment. And I also have several health risks." Women are also turning to companies that sell emergency contraception online or offer abortion pills, mifepristone, and through the telehealth, something that's been happening even before the election, but that some companies say has accelerated. A study earlier this year showed the abortion pill supplier Aid Access received about 48,400 requests from across the U.S. for so-called advanced provision pills from September 2021 through April 2023, with requests highest right after news leaked about Roe being overturned, but before the formal announcement. Other research found that more women had their tubes tied post-Roe, with the biggest increases in states that banned abortion. Mifepristone has a shelf life of about 5 years and misoprostol around 2 years, according to Plan C, an organization that provides information about medical abortions. Plan B typically has a shelf life of 4 years. Telehealth company Wisp saw orders for abortion pills spike 600% between Election Day and the following day. And between November 6th and November 11th, the company saw a 460% increase in sales of its emergency contraception and birth control offerings. At Gen Z-focused Winx Health, which sells emergency contraception called Restart, company leaders saw a 966% increase in sales in the 60 hours following the election compared with the week before. Sales of the value packs of Restart, 4 doses instead of 1, were up more than 7,000% in the past week. Morning after pills are legal in all states, but Winx co-founder Cynthia Plotch said many people seem confused about what emergency contraception is compared to abortion pills. In a 2023 poll by the health policy research organization KFF, a majority of responders said they know these two things aren't the same, but only 27% reported knowing emergency contraceptive pills cannot end a pregnancy. Doctors agree confusion around morning after pills may explain some of the stockpiling, but Alfonso at Duke suspects most people are doing this for the same reason they're seeking longer-term methods of birth control: to avoid abortion by preventing pregnancy in the first place. Alfonso predicts the birth control and abortion pill surge may level out like it did in 2016 and 2022. If the new administration is not focused on health care right away, then I think it'll go to the back of people's minds until it picks up in the media. From the local page, Historical Society honors work from Eureka. The Woodford County Historical Society presented awards to Dennis Tipsword of Metamora and Carol Anderson of Eureka during its meeting on February 14th. Tipsword, who is Chief Deputy Sheriff of Woodford County, as well as elected representative for Illinois House District 105, received the Society's inaugural Historical Preservation Award for his work in restoring the Woodford County Courthouse, according to a news release. The work included removing wood paneling, plastering walls, and revealing and restoring original murals in the courtroom that had been covered by wood paneling for decades, among other projects. The society created the annual award this year to recognize individuals and businesses that demonstrate outstanding efforts to restore and preserve the architecture of structures in Woodford County, according to Society President Beth Miller of El Paso. Saving these structures helps future generations appreciate the beauty and significance of our history and the vision of our predecessors, as well as leaving a visible and lasting record of the periods in which they were constructed. Additionally, the Historical Society gave its James L. Fike Service Award to Carol Anderson for her many volunteer hours, according to Society Vice President Karen Fike. Carol is a wonderful resource for historical and genealogical research, and she has written two books that provide in-depth information about buildings and families in Eureka. The award was established in Fike's memory of her husband, who was president of the Woodford County Historical Society for more than 10 years. He died in 2013. The award honors an individual who has been exceptionally helpful to the society. Membership in the society is open to anyone. For more information, email Miller at miller061738@yahoo.com. Primate time. Meet folks who own monkeys and learn what that's like. For some monkey owners, like Trina Owens, the appeal of a primate is its human likeness. After moving to South Carolina from Boston, Owens missed her 10 children and 13 grandchildren. "I didn't have anyone to really take care of anymore, so I was looking for something that was compatible to companionship. When you look online, you're watching the videos online of people caring for their monkeys. They're becoming part of their families, and they're basically the closest thing to a human to take care of. It's like having a 2-year-old for the rest of your life with Air Jordan," said Donna Greenbow, who owns two monkeys herself. Although she and her husband had dogs, Cantalbo started researching monkey ownership for reasons similar to Owens. "My boys were getting grown, and I love being a mother," she said, "and I guess I was getting baby fever, and I'm too old to have children. And in some ways, private monkey ownership does mirror child care. It was much like taking care of a human baby," said a former monkey owner who asked to be identified only as Bree. "They wear diapers, they eat people food, they can eat monkey food, but most monkeys just throw that type of food at you, and they're like, yeah, no." All three owners have had large cages where the monkeys could be off-leash and unsupervised. However, outside these cages, the monkeys wear diapers to avoid feces around the house. To accomplish this, Catalbo cuts tail holes in diapers made for human babies. While you can't adopt a monkey from your local shelter, it isn't hard to find monkeys in the age of the internet. Private owners typically get them one of two ways, a breeder or another owner getting rid of a monkey. Catalbo got her first monkey, a 4-week-old marmoset named Cisco, from a South Carolina breeder 4 years ago. In January of this year, Catalbo got her second monkey, a 3-week-old vervet monkey called Brenna, from a breeder in Texas. For those going to a licensed breeder, costs can be prohibitively high, a high barrier to entry. Catalbo paid $15,000 for Brenna and $3,500 for Cisco. In the 4 years since purchasing the marmoset, Catalbo estimates prices have risen to roughly $8,000. Bree paid about $10,000 to a breeder in Florida for her first squirrel monkey. After that monkey died in an accident while she was out of town, Bree got a second squirrel monkey in a secure situation from a private owner in another state. That second monkey also died after getting sick. "He caught a cold just like any human. That's how monkeys get sick. It's the same type of diseases, the same type of sicknesses that any human would have." Veterinary care for an exotic animal is a complicated facet of monkey ownership. In many areas, medical care for a monkey can be both pricey and difficult to find. Veterinary visits can run about $1,000 before any necessary vaccines or surgeries. Catawba says it's hard to find professionals knowledgeable about monkeys and has taken Cisco and Brenna hours away for appointments. That's the problem when you see an exotic vet. They know a lot of things about parrots and all the other exotics, but they're not real familiar with monkeys. When Owens got her first monkey, Charlotte, from another owner, the spider monkey was sick and passed pneumonia to Owens. Although she got medicine, Owens wasn't able to get Charlotte a veterinary appointment for weeks. Realizing that she was pretty much very sick and getting sicker by the day, what I decided to do was take my medication that I was getting for me and start giving it to her and tell my doctor that my medicine wasn't working for me. She adopted Pixie, another spider monkey from the same home as Charlotte, who was also sick with pneumonia soon after. Both monkeys survived and regained their health, but according to Owens, the veterinarian told her Charlotte would have died before she could get in for an appointment without Owens' medication. Feeding a monkey is a much simpler task. In addition to fresh fruits and vegetables, some owners give monkeys special monkey food and vitamins. These supplements can be costly, but are easily accessible through online stores. I basically buy them on Amazon, and they come in different flavors. Monkey biscuits basically carry all the basic vitamins that they need on a daily basis, along with the monkey food that they have. Living in captivity, however, some monkeys get a taste for food they shouldn't find in the wild. Cisco Capallo's marmoset has a particular taste for Italian wedding soup. Believe it or not, he's supposed to eat vegetables, but he loves Italian food. My husband's Italian, so we started him on Italian food when he started eating food, and now he eats Italian food. And if you give him anything else, he will throw his bowl to the other side of his cage. And from the sports page, state title dreams fall just short. Mater Dei beats Central Catholic to win championship from Normal. Reaching the state championship is no small feat, especially when the opponent is a defending champion. For the Central Catholic Saints, standing in their way of a first-place trophy was Brees Mater Dei. The Knights swept the IHSA Class 2A title match a year ago and returned aiming for a repeat. In a thrilling match from start to finish, the Saints, 35-4, fell just short of first place. The Knights capitalized on two straight Central Catholic errors to break a 23-23 tie in set three of Saturday's IHSA Class 2A state final at CFCU Arena in Normal to win their second consecutive title. A little bit bittersweet, Central Catholic head coach Jenny Menendez said, "We obviously wanted to come out on top, but I'm super proud of how all of them played. Today is not our day, but I think we got a taste of what that looks like. In about a year, I think you'll see us back up on top." After the Saints took set one, the Knights responded with victory in set two. Central Catholic jumped out to a 14-9 advantage in the third frame after a kill by Audrey Fair. Mater Dei used a 7-2 run to tie the set at 16-16. And a hint from Heloise, I work at a recycling plant and I want to remind people that we recycle more than just plastic. We also need your clean paper, wrapping paper, junk mail, clean cans, glass jars, drinking glasses, etc. Waste not, want not. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, November 18th. Please stay tuned.